I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
Are you serious?
My pussy's on fire. Crotchy the masturbating clown. Flipper goes postal. All story titles that appeared on GettingIt.com, the webzine that brought Jeff Diehl, Steve Robles, and myself together in 1999. Which you are all, of course, regretting. And we'll be talking and hanging out with most of the staff for the webzine that was getting it in this special two-part Are You Serious show. And I see over there Jeff. It looks like he's rubbing his nose a little bit. And Steve Robles is
not rubbing his nose, yeah.
Not rubbing his nose. And Diana Brown, of course.
Of course. Well, thank you, Are You? It's terrific to be here. And, you know, apparently beautiful people are more likely to have daughters. A study has shown that attractive women are easier to find than handsome men because beautiful parents are more likely to have daughters than sons. And this is the percentage of this is 36% more likely to have a daughter than a son as their firstborn. Now, this backs the evolutionary theory that people tend to produce children who benefit from their own attributes.
I think, wait a second, this backs the existence of God, I think.
Yeah.
So basically, you're thanking God for beautiful women, and you know, I think there are many people in the world that would agree with you. But it's backed up by a dear doctor's theories, because Dr. Satoshi Kanazawa, an evolutionary psychologist at the London School of Economics, who led the study, he said, physical attractiveness is good for both men and women, but it's much better for women than for men. So, physically attractive parents bias their offspring sex ratio to have more daughters. And he concludes that on data drawn from 3,000 Americans, I think it's very interesting they only used Americans, although they were in London, they were assessed for factors that provide an objective measurement of attractiveness, such as symmetry, characteristics, you know, and in females, you know, enlarged breasts, and in men, body hair. Although I'm not really sure a lot of body hair is all that popular. How do you guys weigh in on that?
I can tell you for sure that body hair is not considered generally to be a...
So are you sharing that you have your back
waxed? As one who is in possession of quite a bit of it.
So are you his hirsute, I believe.
They may have been referencing the opposite, that if you have body hair, it's not attractive.
Well, yeah, because aren't the guys supposed to be getting uglier?
Well, no, that's exactly it. Apparently, as time goes on, the gap between men and women will grow, and this is because physical attractiveness is heritable, and because physically attractive parents have more daughters, and less attractive parents have more sons.
What about in China, though, where they abort all the girls?
Well, then there's a lot, I guess, of, you know, very unattractive to somewhat attractive men running around.
There's a lot of them, so they might be sort of evening out the... Keeping the equilibrium of the species going.
That's very possible. We should look into that. But I don't know. Something about this smacks of the whole, you know, Barbie saying math is hard. And I'm not really sure what my objection here is.
I don't really trust Barbie, actually, for a while. But...
Well, no, my point being that, you know, girls are not supposed to, you know, worry about knowing math and learning. And it's only for little boys to be engineers and build bridges.
I think evolution is extremely sexist.
All right, we are here at the beginning of our conversation with all the people, or as many people as we could round up from gettingit.com. Actually, of all the people who are going to come in, only Paul McHenry apparently got lost on the way here. Was seen.
He was seen
walking down the street looking somewhat like a zombie, which I think was pretty much the case while he was working for us as well. Right now we have Matt Honan.
Hello.
And we have Andy Bao, who actually you may have heard before on my Neophile show, and he runs upcoming.org. org. So, hello. But he was our art director way back when. And Matt, you were the editor of a section, I think.
I was
weren't
a section
you?
Editor, yes.
And what was it called?
It was called Whoa.
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 So, So, what the fuck was.
Whoa was like the crazy tabloid, we're not sure where else to put this kind of section. It was the. There was humor, there was some tabloid news, there was some. There was basically anything that didn't quite fit into Scope, which was Paul's section, wound up in my section.
Sort of straighter version of
right,
well. So this was our.
You know what, though, you're not doing justice to that to your section, though, because I think that our you and I anyway definitely considered yours to be more representative of the overall tone.
I think that was the center of the magazine. That was the essence of the magazine.
Oh, that's great.
I mean.
Well, that makes
we started out.
Better.
What did we start out? What did, if you remember the article that you
Paul
started
had,
out with?
Paul had me convinced, actually, that Scope was the center of the magazine.
we had him
convinced of that, too.
Actually, yeah. Do you remember your first article?
First article, I believe we launched with Black Dahlia's A Mat on the Moon, Andy Kaufman story.
Okay.
I think the first one that I wrote was Crotchy the Masturbating
That's
Clown, which I believe
for.
Was, wasn't that day three that we ran that?
Was it the third day?
I believe so.
So tell people, favorite. I mean, how did Definitely. You track down this important piece of journalism?
I believe I was using a purloined Nexus password and looking up recent news articles on masturbating clowns when I came across Crotchy. You know, I don't remember how I found it. I don't remember how I found it exactly, uh-huh. but I'm sure I found it. I would.
And who did you talk to? Did you talk to Crotchy? I can't remember.
No, I talked to Crotchy's parents who didn't. I guess I should back up. Crotchy was a guy who had a public access TV show, and he dressed up like a clown and did all kinds of weird stuff. And I've forgotten where he was. Somewhere in like Minnesota or something. I don't remember. But one day he decided to spank it on the air and got in trouble, and he took it to court and tried to fight it, and things didn't go his way. But by the time I read about the court case initially somewhere, and then tried to get in touch with them, but at that point he had his parents sort of intercepting calls, and he wanted to disassociate himself with the whole Crotchy thing.
Andy, we've gotten a few letters. You've been running gettingit.com. You've been keeping the site alive. Basically, we don't do new articles. Maybe we will sometime in the future, but we don't do them now, and yet you've been keeping the site alive, and we get lots of responses to different pieces. And people seem to think they're actually talking to the author of the article who have long since forgotten it. And then we have people who've complained and want the articles to come off the site.
Yeah,
but Crotchy has not complained.
No ill response on Crotchy. I look at the stats once in a while, and it gets the strangest web search traffic of any site ever.
Really? So how would you describe that?
What's like, weird? I mean, it's like a combination of absolutely perverse keywords, you'll have testicular saline injections or prostate massage or you'll have the people that are obsessed with the Dana Plato's corpse thing gets quite a bit of traffic.
Really?
People looking for like Dana Plato nude photos and things like that too.
What about the the people looking to sell their organs? Because I know that always has comments.
Yeah,
on
that's
that
my
story.
That's my all time favorite. It's like the most. It's like.
What article does that come out of?
It's an article called Body Bazaar, I think, which was about people selling their organs, but it is ranked well in the various search engines, and so comes up when you're searching for things like sell my liver, and people think that. You know, well, I want to sell my kidneys or my liver, and I need quick cash, and so they search for this, hearing that they can do that, and then they find the article, but pretty much ignore the entire article and using getting it as like an organ trading forum,
does that get the most comments? So
it gets a tremendous amount. It gets a ton of comments. It's in the top three.
And can we get all these people to listen
that
to our podcast?
That is how we could have made money if we had
podcast could advertise
on the comments of Body Bazaar. Oh,
based on our association with all that, and you definitely ran a lot of other strange articles too, Andy.
I believe I did. I had totally forgotten about that. Mm-hmm. I did. I think I talked to Fred Phelps' sister or niece.
It's all just his family.
One of it, yeah, they're all his family. Yeah, and Lord, that family probably has some interesting webs. But yeah, I did talk to them, and it was I remember that I had totally forgotten that. I remember that it was really scary talking to her because she was such a true believer. You know, I mean, and just so unapologetic about, you know. I expected her to have a little bit more tact when I called up and wanted to talk, and it was just very. We think these people are fags, and we hate the fags, and we want the fags to burn in hell, and that's what they're doing. And a dog eats its own vomit. And I didn't quite make the last connection, but the first part I understood. You know, and
I thought it was that dog always returns to its own vomit.
Is that a classic, classic debating strategy? Just end with that. Yeah. Dog always returns to its own. Tough to refute.
Yeah, I couldn't argue with that really. But it was they were scary. They were strange people. You know, they're protesting. They're protesting military funerals now.
I know, that's the weirdest thing. Yeah, they go, they protest. Yeah, well, people already know the story, but it's so bizarre. Now, you came in and you redid the look of the site, and our previous art director was a fellow named John Mendelson. Does anybody remember Mendelson?
Did you meet him at all? John wasn't responsible for the look of the site, though.
The
running look of the site was done by Jesse. Yeah.
Jesse, so I didn't get to meet John. I came in while Jesse Klein was.
So I guess Mendelson never got to that point.
No, he self-destructed pretty early on.
And then he wrote a bitchy article about
kiss
us
and
for,
tell thing
for was... Bohemian Magazine, describing how awful I looked when I came into the office. And that was pretty strange. He's very well known.
Is he?
Or he was a very well-known rock writer. But you remember, yeah, in the 70s, 80s, writing for Rolling Stone and Cream. And
I remember he always dropped David Geffen's name, like, in every conversation, but I didn't know
right.
that he was
I just, like I said, I thought he looked like Sergeant Pepper, but I didn't realize that he actually played
the
band.
Deliberate.
He was Sergeant Pepper.
Himself. That's great.
What would you say was, like, some of the strangest experiences you had in terms of, like, dealing with writers or dealing with the magazine itself? Did you feel like we were Charlie's Angels with Al?
I did feel like we were Charlie's Angels with Al, and
to describe what the situation was, or somebody, Jeff, if you want.
Well, you know, Al was the president of the company WebPower that funded gettingit.com. It was a porn company. I think it's still around, and as far as I know, Al is still at the helm, but I haven't spoken to him in years. But as far as you guys know, he doesn't even exist. But you know,
I always thought it might be you.
If that's the case, I'm taking that one to my grave. But
not
as far as my story goes, he actually did communicate with me, and you know, it was a constant battle with him to keep the magazine the way that we were doing it. And I know that even that had, you know, there was some conflict a little bit, you know, amongst us as far as like. Maybe we should go in this direction or that direction, but we had to placate him every now and then. But it was almost probably on a weekly basis. I had to justify not putting in more sex, not putting in more cheesy celebrity stuff, not putting in more sports. You know, the typical like male magazine type.
The mandate was always it's got to be sexier. It's got to
Was that a headache for you?
Well, it was in the sense that you know I was living in San Francisco.
We were doing our best. We had what?
No, we had
half of it was dedicated to But there was only one section of actual visual erotica each week.
He didn't really care so much about that, because remember that Getting It was supposed to legitimate his legitimize. What's
the
word?
He was going to go public based on our good reputation.
Well, that was part of the plan, and it was like, oh, if I had some other property that would other than porn, then I can say that I have some value besides just destroying the youth. But but in general, he didn't have a whole lot of problem with. He wanted it to be sexy because he wanted to. Still sort of leverage off of his, his business. But the thing is, a lot of the sex stuff that we did wasn't typical hetero, mainstream.
Very unusual. It was
sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of gay themed stuff. There's a lot of S&M. There's just San Francisco sex culture.
My
type
pussy's
stuff.
On fire. I think was
it's got pussy in
articles.
It, but it's the pussy's on fire. Yeah, it's so
they
I think
wrecked,
that,
they wrecked my genitals, which
they wrecked my genitals.
Talking about later, I think
we will. So in that sense, yeah, I think on a regular basis I had to wrestle with Al a little bit, and we kind of pulled some fast ones on him, and that's, for instance with the sex stuff. He said do a lot of sex, and we did like San Francisco sex culture type stuff. That was a little bit of a kind of a
in Rome.
A workaround, a little bit of a workaround.
Yeah, And I think that only because it was done well, and that that was the only reason that he didn't come right out early on and, like, you know, put the kibosh on it.
He never seemed to ask about ads, though.
It wasn't ever supposed to make money, really. He was thinking that maybe eventually it could, but that wasn't the point. His business was always extremely profitable. He was, you know,
right, he didn't want to sell ads, and he wouldn't allow us to publicize the site.
Right.
That part, even that I never fully understood.
Yeah. I never fully understood that. That always bugged me. That was the biggest thing.
It was the first time in my life I was ever told not to talk to the press, which goes completely against my nature, but... My only
idea for that was that he actually had it in the back of his mind. He had this escape plan and escape, you know, strategy, whatever, an exit strategy, which was, as long as I don't promote it, I don't have to worry about any kind of anybody missing it when it's gone, you know. And then maybe he let it go for as long as he possibly could, and then whenever the .com thing started to go sour and he saw his business start to drop off, like whenever the financials got rough in the tech industry in general, it was more difficult for him to get the credit card companies to you know, deal with him as far as chargebacks and stuff, because in porn there's a high chargeback rate. Somebody gets their mom's credit card or their wife's credit card and they buy porn, and the wife finds out, and then they have to call up and cancel it. You know, happens a lot. The credit card companies don't like that. So anyway, the overall financials went down, and he said, well, I'm not going to bother with this anymore.
All right.
So maybe that's why. Maybe he was just waiting to see what happened in the market in general before he wanted to publicize it.
Yeah. And, the amazing thing is that we did manage to put, 5 to 9 articles out every weekday. And all of us basically went home around dinner time except Andy, our art director, who was left behind making sure that everything. So did you plot to kill us at any point?
Well, our art director was kind of a... strange title for me, because I was the only person doing in the office.
Like, anytime there's a problem.
So, from the programming and the web server and the content management system, managing that, and the system administration and the front end web design, and then stuff around the
art
office.
Art director. Like, what?
And then the art. Yeah, of course, that's an art director. Isn't that what all art directors do?
I believe so.
So yeah, I was pretty busy. But I was straight out of college, so I didn't...
You were hungry.
I didn't mind being exploited so much.
It was fun. You had a pretty good
deal.
If
only we could find more people like that today.
I had a great time, and it ended up working out pretty well.
So how did it impact on your career? Or
well,
did it?
We were talking about this leading up to this... to this conversation, was that if it wasn't for my time at Getting It, I wouldn't have gone into doing more pro programming. Dave Castle, who you'll talk to later,
right,
first turned me on to Perl. And then when I moved to LA after Getting It went south, I went and did pro programming full time, and then ended up parlaying that into further programming positions, and then did upcoming.org, which got acquired by Yahoo. So if it wasn't for Getting It, I wouldn't have sold my startup.
There you go. You owe us big time, man. So were there ever any pieces that you got where you said, fuck it, man, I'm not going to design this one?
No, I pretty much did everything. Yeah, like you guys, you know, had some crazy ass stories, and they got weirder and weirder as the site went on.
And I like that you made everything look good with yellow or green or whatever.
No, it's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible to make anything look good with that green. It was so bad.
I always contended it was actually yellow. Everybody said green, but I felt it was yellow. To me, that was yellow.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe I'm colorblind, but yeah.
Maybe.
Yellow.
It's pretty green.
As far as like usability goes, black text on like a bright neon yellow green is just not not recommended.
It wasn't meant to be read by those who lack patience with nausea. Actually, Matt, one last question: any writers that you wanted to strangle that you managed? I mean, you were an editor.
Annalee Newitz was absolutely the worst pain in the ass that I ever had to deal with.
Well, everybody knows.
I'm kidding, of course, because she was the best writer I worked with. But there were. There was one woman who was writing a sports piece that somehow or another wound up in my lap. I think Paul had originally assigned it to her, and she was some sort of sports psychology piece that she was writing. I don't remember what it was, but she didn't get the whole getting it thing. She didn't understand that we weren't interested in kind of a
straight story.
It was something that would have run in the, you know, Chicago Tribune that she handed us, and we didn't want that. And we sent it back to her like twice, and finally wound up killing it, and she refused to take the kill fee, and kept emailing me personally, you know, my personal email address, you know, and saying, I'm not taking the kill fee. You owe me for the entire article. And I kept saying, look, you know, this company is about to be done. And if you want to get paid anything, you really need to send the contract back and take the kill fee. And I found, I don't know what actually.
I don't know whatever happened to it.
I don't remember the exact. So was that the one that came originally from Doug? Because remember, Doug was.
I think actually you're right. Yeah, I think it came Doug. It went Doug to Paul to me. And by the time it got to me, it was like ready to be killed. And it was just. And she made a huge stink about it, and was like, and was bothering me like at home, you know, about it. And but I don't know. But yeah, she was the only one who really sticks out.
Did it last a while? We got some strange letters. I mean, years later. But we should actually break for some getting it friendly music and come back and talk to our next two guests.
Hey, so I think we'll play a track from Anton Maiden.
God, Anton Maiden, the best.
Did a story on Anton Maiden, right,
yeah,
Andy?
So Anton Maiden. Well, getting it covered first, which was
we broke that story, right?
Broke the story, like so many other internet culture stories at the time. Anton Maiden was that kid that like Swedish kid that it's like this teen that recorded Iron Maiden tracks. He did the vocals over like MIDI songs, just unbelievably cheesy, and it made its way onto the internet and made its way to Aquarius Records, and
you said was because the update with him is
in I think 2003 he committed suicide, which is
so okay. After a moment of silence, we'll play I guess we'll play Run to the Hills by Anton Maiden.
Good choice.
Across the sea, he brought us pain and misery. He killed our tribe, he killed our greed. He took our game for his own need. We fought him hard, we fought him well. Out on the plain, we gave him hell. But man, it came too much for grief. Oh, will we ever be set free? Riding through dust clouds and barren ways, galloping hard on the plains, chasing the redskins back to their hold, fighting them at their own game. Murder for freedom, the stab in the back, women and children and cowards attack. Run to the hills, run for your barren waste, hunting and killing the game, raping the women and wasting the men. The only good Indians are tame, selling them whiskey and taking their gold, enslaving the young and destroying the old. Run to the hills, run for your line. run to the hills. Run for your life. Run to the hills. Run for your life. Run to the hills. Run.
Okay, we are here with David Castle and Allison Quibel. And Allison was actually the editor of our celebrity section.
She was also managing editor.
Managing editor. She was.
I had to keep the troops in line.
Like Andy,
you did a
she
great
was
job
more too. Or less responsible for keeping the monkeys
in the cage
from going completely, flinging too much poop at the walls. And did a wonderful job. And David, I think you were basically hired on to hang out and write all day.
No, actually, I was a lot of stuff. I was hired to surf the web and look for pictures. I could never explain it to people. It was 3 days a week. Just to do flip.
That's right.
Flip. They say, what is it? It's a giant monkey's paw holding a remote control. Yeah. And when you click on it, you get a picture. And they pay you for that? Yeah.
Brilliant.
And then eventually they said, hey, when you want to try writing something too? And then it kind of snowballed from there. I went to 5 days a week and then started writing lots of stuff. And pretty soon I was writing so much stuff, I said, you know, if I just quit this and freelance my articles, I can make more money because you guys are paying the freelancers great. And I said, it's the perfect crime. I'll quit. I'll sell the same articles to them at a higher rate, and I'll make more money. And then about 3 weeks later, the site folded, and everyone else got severance.
Oh.
Yeah. Because you weren't full-time.
That's right. Well, because I was a freelancer at that point. I switched from full-time to freelance.
Oh.
But, and yet you are perhaps the most legendary one of us, because you did write the piece about Dana Plato's corpse.
Which is still getting all kinds of comments. It's always kind of fun to go back and see, because we wrote these articles in 1999, and then we kind of cast them out into cyberspace. And they're still out there. We all went on with our lives, but the articles are still out there, and lost web surfers find them and leave these crazy random comments on them.
And so often, I've mentioned this, often directing them towards the writer who has long since forgotten
that
the article existed. Look, dude, you blah, 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 blah.
In fact, like, a lot of times when the writers remember that they wrote those articles, they've contacted us and said, can you get that off of the Google because it's screwing up my chances for getting a job.
We've had two people say it was ruining their lives, actually. And one guy threatened to sue. I think
there was a threat of a lawsuit, and I can't remember now exactly what that was. Did I tell you about that, Andy? You don't remember that? I don't remember now either. He was completely off base, and I told him to shut up, and he went away. But yeah,
we still get angry Pete Sampras fans from that 1999 article making fun of his website.
Yeah, well, we had that whole series of sort of deconstructing celebrity websites. That was part of
the dirt section.
That was fun, that was fun.
So what celebrities did we actually hook up with any real celebrities? I'm trying to remember.
We had a David Bowie interview.
That's right, we did.
We had
a
Jennifer Tilly.
Jennifer Tilly. We had, it's all gone away now.
Well, there was Stan Lee.
Stan Lee,
Crumb.
George Clinton.
George Clinton.
Yeah, that's
a
pretty good
combination.
Already.
Yeah, there was some.
No, Jeff did the George Clinton.
Me and Matt. Actually, Matt did most of the interview on that. George Clinton.
In fact, I found an email from 1999 where Matt said we should make George Clinton be our ombudsman, and he could just sort of keep us in line, making sure that we were funky enough for the web.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's tough for George, I think, to stay focused, to get on the internet or be on a computer for very long. He had some rough times.
He's a bouncy guy.
Well, it was a couple years ago. Didn't he get arrested for crack out in Florida?
I think so, in a car or something like that. Yeah. And then I think his wife or girlfriend got it busted also.
Because she's gone.
In San
I didn't
Francisco
know that.
With
Did you? Oh,
lot
really?
Of, a lot of different things. But,
and George Carlin actually contacted us looking for an interview.
Who did?
George Carlin.
Oh, Carlin. Yeah, that's right. I interviewed George Carlin. That's right.
We didn't call him. That's the weird part. He said, hey, I want to get him to interview me. It was his agent said, please talk to me.
Interesting.
I don't know how that happened.
So, Allison, were there any writers that you dealt with who gave you a real hard time?
I think I've blacked it out, or I don't think so. I think it was pretty. I mean, I'm sure there were some, but no one that I mean, the story that you just told me, though, about Peter Bronstedt,
this is news to me.
He seemed like a perfectly normal guy.
Yeah, well, here's a guy
quiet.
Who...
I never would have suspected that he... Yeah.
Here's a guy who, Paul McHenry, I guess, didn't make it here today. Maybe Bronstein got to him before he could get here. But I think McHenry actually managed most of his articles in another section. Here's a guy who wrote, I think, like 20 or so articles for us. Some of them for your section, yeah. and Village Voice writer. Always well-written articles.
Yeah.
Nothing cranky about them particularly, or, you know... probably seemingly some of the more sane pieces that we might have received. And a couple of years ago, he was stalking his ex-girlfriend, and he knocked her out with chloroform and raped her for 13 hours solid, and then took off, and there was a giant manhunt for him. And he's very famous in New York City. He was on the cover of the Daily News frequently. I believe he was even taunting the police and so forth. And eventually he was caught. He was sort of semi-caught, or I can't remember the exact thing. He was stabbed in the leg.
Jeez.
And he admitted who he was, and now he's in Bellevue Hospital. So I guess if we do start up getting it again, we won't be getting too many new articles.
We could get reports from Bellevue. But.
Peter Bronstein.
Well, and I remember Luca Brone wrote Stalking for Assholes. And, yeah. And then it turned out that actually somebody that worked for us actually had a stalker. And
yeah.
And he said, you know, that actually it's a lot funnier in the abstract than in real life.
Yeah, there's not really anything funny about stalkers.
No.
Well, although that
there's nothing funny about any of the stuff we laugh at. That's where humor comes from.
I mean, that Bronstein thing, while it's horrific and yet also almost like, I don't know, you have to admire it in its sheer ambition. Mm. How do you rape somebody for 13 hours?
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if he had a big supply of Viagra or mixed with cocaine or what. That's true. I was on a solid 13 hours, or did he rest?
Yeah.
We need to get more of the details for this story.
I wonder if the articles he wrote will be like...
Now, maybe... I wonder if Wilt Chamberlain could have pulled this off. Now, you wrote a... Wilt,
The day he died,
we
yeah.
don't need to mean to imply that Wilt ever did anything that he didn't have full permission to do, but you wrote an article about his exploits, actually.
That was one of my 24-hour specials. It was like... I'm really proud of that one, because it was like a Wednesday. It was 4 o'clock, and they said, hey, Wilt Chamberlain died. By tomorrow at noon, have an article about... Not about a sports career, about his other career as a he was famous for having he claimed he'd made love to 10,000 different women. And what I loved about that is that we'd find these crazy ideas for stories, and then as you dug a little bit deeper, you'd actually find some really interesting additional details that weren't popularly known. He actually once said, yes, I made love to 10,000 women, but you know what's cool is to make love to one woman 10,000 times.
Yeah. I guess you don't have to brag at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, within 13 hours.
Now, you also, I think you were the one who dealt with Maher, didn't you?
Maher Kagri. Matt and I worked on that together.
That was a great,
We had one of the first stories about Maher Kagri. What was great about that is we'd sent him an email pretending...
Here is the I Kiss You.
That's right. The Turkish guy playing the accordion. Welcome to my homepage, I Kiss You. Right. I have many musical instruments in my home. So I think it was Matt. I'm not sure who did this, but they sent an email saying, Dear Maher, I would like to come to Turkey. I am a young American woman, and I would need someone to show me around, maybe someone cute like you. And basically messing with his head. My favorite line in that piece is that we said, you know, we had to meet this Turkish mystery man because the internet is a giant global community, and because we want to be friendship from other country as well, and because we couldn't resist messing with Maher's head. And I don't know. The neat thing about that was that he was just some loser looking for a date that had a webpage on the internet, and that was, of course, just ripe for people to come on and make fun of that. And within a couple of days, he had millions of people visiting his website. And what would you do if all of a sudden you woke up and you found out that this webpage you'd forgotten about 6 months ago was suddenly getting a million visitors from all around the world, people holding up signs saying, "We kiss you back, Maher," in France and England and Canada and Australia. And what Maher did was kind of beautiful. Thank you for coming to our webpage, and while you're here, we should take a moment to think about those less fortunate than us. Here's some links to the Red Cross.
So he's sort of the William Hung of time in some ways.
William Hung being...
But more... Was that the guy's name from American Idol?
Something William like that. Hung? Something Hung. I know
more,
he was Hung.
More
the guy
charming.
From Cal.
I just remember a few weeks later, we were in that break room reading the paper, and there, someone said, hey, there's an earthquake in Turkey. Huh. hey, I wonder how my hair is doing. And that was the moment we realized that, you know, just the guy with the webpage became...
Has anybody heard from him recently?
Became a .com spokesman for a while. Huh. David Bowie actually had a picture of my hair, Cagney, that he'd take on talk show saying, I love this guy. Yeah, kiss you guy. His ISP went down, and he said, I'm being censored by my Turkish ISP. Haven't heard from him recently. Somebody told me that, Andy, I think, was telling me this, that in 2002, Mahir got around to answering the 500,000th email that he'd gotten. He went through and answered them all one by one.
Wow.
Yeah, so actually 2003, 4 years after Matt, I think it was an email from Matt or from Dave. We got an email response to the getting it server from Mahir, and it was a response to like essentially a 4-year-old email saying thank you so much. Like, it kind of reminded me of like Ringo Starr on The Simpsons responding to like Marge's letter from 30 years before. It's pretty funny. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I just found this entry on Wikipedia. I read this little blurb. It says, Mahir Kagri's website was quickly spread through word of mouth on the internet. The website came at a time when, quote, internet phenomenon, unquote, was a new concept for internet users, media, and the curious public. Novelty pages such as Dancing Baby and The Hamster Dance created a precedent of mass viewing for Mahir's page, which I think segues us well into the Hamster Dance.
Yeah, another one of David Castle's greatest hits.
That was my very first article for getting it. In fact, that was when I was really, my job was just to look for funny pictures on the web. I'm probably on the web going, okay, here's one of, a half-naked woman wrestling. Okay, that's okay. Here's a whole page of Dancing Hamsters. And it was actually McKinney that said, wait, go back to that one. What, the Dancing Hamsters? Yeah, there's like 200. That's incredible. Are you? Check this out. There's Dancing Hamsters on a webpage. And then, wait, when you hear the song. And so they said, Dave writes about the Hamster Dance. They're like, all right, they want me to write something. This is my big break here. I'm going to write the best damn article you've ever seen about Dancing Hamsters in your life. I was going to the library doing like Lexis searches on the New Yorker from 1968 to learn about the life of Roger Miller, who was the voice behind the Hamster Dance.
That's right. What song was it from?
It was a Walt Disney movie from Robin Hood. It's called Whistle Stop. You can download it illegally on the internet if you just use the right name. And there's some guy, actually, this is what's so great about
Whistle Stops.
It's called Whistle Stop. The song, it started out with a whistle and then a hum and then dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. That's it. What's wild is after being on the web for 7 years, some guy swings by our webpage, sees the article, and says, hey, I was the guy that took that sound clip and speeded it up into the hamster voice, and I never got any credit for it. Which is true. This woman in Canada didn't know how to make web pages. The GeoCities had a template. They said, what image do you want on your web page? And she says, I want these images of these dancing hamsters. And then she kept on hitting the insert key over and over again, and almost by accident invented the hamster dance page. And then it became a huge phenomenon. Some band in Britain sampled it. It was a top 10 hit.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Are people doing variations off of that song now that you know?
I think it's kind of, its moment is past. Now the hamster dance is almost a symbol of things that used to be really cool and now just kind of make you sick. But what was great is when the millennium was ending in 1999, it's December, and Cliff Richard records the Lord's Prayer set to the tune of Auld Lang Syne. And he says, as the millennium comes to a close, I think it's fitting and proper that we all remember it with my song, Millennium Prayer. And it was going to be like the number one song in England. And at the last minute, the hamster dance song starts overtaking it. And because really, honestly, they're just so damn cute. It really means more to us than the Lord's Prayer. Sorry, Cliff Richard.
Now, Allison, before you joined Getting At It, you were working at a law firm, weren't you?
I worked for American Lawyer Media, actually, before and after Getting At It.
Before and after.
They
took you back.
They took me back.
Did they ever look at what you were doing in between?
I don't think they really
to,
they
able
didn't
able
care.
To avoid
yeah.
it.
We will not speak of that.
I got some when I was leaving to go to Getting It from... I guess it was Cal Law or Law. I can't remember. It was part of American Lawyer Media. Someone did a mock, sort of a mock front page of their website. That's something we did when we leave. It's like right. Someone would mock up something, and it was sorts of jokes about the porn industry and things.
So they knew even that connection to
it.
Wow.
Yeah. It wasn't that they did investigating and figured it out.
When you thought about the contrast between the two places, did you ever go, "What? My God!"
I loved the fact that we every day we came in and like, what are we going to do today? We had that big
meetings were pretty good, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we could do whatever we wanted, and that was in the era of Webvan, so we had all this. We had snacks. We had the kitchen full of snacks and. And it was, it was fun.
I think we were just getting ready to bring in the massage person when Al pulled the plug.
They would bring free ice cream to you. There was a promotion at Cosmo ran where they said, if you go to this webpage and type in your address, we'll bring you a free pint of ice cream. And then everyone said, well, wait, I want ice cream. And so one by one, we'd all go to the website and order free ice cream. They kept on trucking in with more free ice cream for us. We said, man, the dot-com era is fantastic. They bring you ice cream at work.
Yeah. Cosmo. Doesn't get much better than that.
I want to thank you both for joining us. This is the end of this Getting It, but we'll be back next week with yet more members of the Getting It staff. So you just can't get enough, can you? Thanks.
Thank you.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!